your Polycast for Thursday, May 18th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a setback in budget talks at the Capitol and Amy Klobuchar on the Russia investigation. Budget negotiations between DFL Governor Mark Dayton and Republican legislative leaders have broken down, and Dayton is raising the possibility of a state government shutdown. The two sides last night accused each other of not compromising. There are now just 5 days left in the session, and it's unclear when talks will resume. Tim Pugmire has more.
Dayton's latest offer gave Republicans less than $700 million to divide between two of their priorities, tax cuts and transportation funding. Not surprisingly, GOP leaders rejected the proposal. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka accused the governor of moving backwards from his early positions on both areas. He said Republicans made a counteroffer that moved a bit closer to Dayton's position on tax cuts and spending, but Dayton didn't like it. Despite the setback, Gazelka isn't giving up.
We're going to keep negotiating and working. We know we have to come to an agreed end, or at least we think we need to. So, you know, the governor was very upset, and we know that we just have to keep working towards a positive conclusion for Minnesota.
Dayton said his offer was Minnesota fair because it would have met Republicans halfway. GOP leaders flatly reject that calculation and characterization. Dayton accused Republicans of wanting to cut state programs and services to the bone to pay for what he called a tax giveaway. He also suggested that he's done compromising.
We're not making an offer that goes beyond halfway. This is what happened in 2011. We were $3 billion apart. And I dropped $1.5 billion and said, I'll meet you halfway. They didn't budge. We ended up in a shutdown. If they won't budge, that's probably what we have in the cards.
Budget talks weren't the only snag. House Republicans suffered a setback in their effort to pass an $800 million bonding bill when Democrats held back their support. The GOP-crafted package of public construction projects needed some DFL help to reach the 3/5 majority required for borrowing measures. It fell 11 votes short. DFL Representative Alice Hausman of St. Paul said Republicans left out too many projects on college campuses. She said her side wants a bigger bill.
We're all sort of settling in on a $995 million bill, and we need a little bit of cash, maybe $50 million general fund, because there are some of those projects that aren't bondable. And we would have a bill that would come to the House and Senate floor. It would pass overwhelmingly with bipartisan votes, and it would help the whole state of Minnesota.
Republicans tried unsuccessfully to convince Democrats to support the bill to get it to conference committee with the Senate. House Speaker Kurt Dowd questioned why Democrats would want to block the bill and delay its resolution.
Unfortunately, people think that at this time in session that playing those kinds of games is somehow helpful to get our work done, and it's just not, but whatever.
The House and Senate had a significant legislative accomplishment yesterday when they passed a compromise measure on Real ID implementation. The effort to move Minnesota toward compliance with the federal law had been hung up for a year due to disagreements over language prohibiting unauthorized immigrants from obtaining driver's licenses. Negotiators finally removed that contentious section. Republican Representative Dennis Smith of Maple Grove said the conference committee improved the bill.
This bill has come back with enhanced driver's license for all locations. This bill came back with rulemaking being silent. And this bill is fiscally sound.
Republican Senator Warren Limmer of Maple Grove has been fighting against Real ID for years. He was at it again yesterday with a warning about federal overreach.
This is becoming a new chapter in American history, and quite honestly, I think we're going to regret it.
The bill is now headed to Governor Dayton, who said again that he will sign it. He also commended the legislature for working that one out. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
DFL U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar says she's pleased to see the Justice Department appoint a special counsel to investigate Russia's alleged interference with the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign. The announcement follows more than a week of turmoil in Washington and the Trump administration following the firing of FBI Director James Comey on May 9th. Klobuchar says she believes Robert Mueller is a good choice to lead an independent investigation because he has a good track record as the former FBI director.
I actually got to see him work on some issues with my state with recruiting, terrorist recruiting from al-Shabaab, and it wasn't an easy issue, and he did a good job. And I think a lot of people have had that experience. That's why you're seeing this broad bipartisan support.
Klobuchar also said she wants to question Deputy U.S. Attorney General Rod Rosenstein today on the reason he gave for James Comey's firing.
So one of the questions I'm going to be asking Rod Rosenstein is, how did they come to this conclusion to fire him? I mean, we've learned that the original memo he did was something of a pretense, given what the president later said and given what spokespeople have said. And I'd like to know why they fired him, given that, from my experience, he had a very good reputation.
DFL Senator Amy Klobuchar. The Minneapolis murder trial of a woman accused of selling heroin to two men who died of overdoses highlights the struggles of people addicted to heroin. The trial also revealed the toll the drug takes on the families and friends of people who are hooked on it. Brent Williams has more.
Earlier this week, Colleen Ronnie testified about what happened just before her son Luke took his last dose of heroin. On January 6, 2016, Luke returned from a three-week trip to Australia. She said in the car on the way home from the airport, Luke showed signs of progress in his fight against addiction.
He was so excited about the rest of his life and getting back down to Arizona and doing his study abroad in Australia. And so you go, okay, you know, that's not even where his head's at. His head's not on trying to use.
But that changed almost as soon as he got home. Ronnie says Luke announced that he was going out with a friend for about an hour. She says she had a bad feeling about it. Ronnie says over the years living with Luke's addiction, there were often moments of hope and anxiety.
When your kid is well, when they're doing good, you're almost just as scared as when they're in active addiction, because you're waiting always for the other shoe to drop.
The next morning, Ronnie and her husband Dave found Luke unconscious in his bed. Photos of Luke's body and the death scene were shown in court.
Listening to the Ronnies when they were on the stand talking about, like, that night that Luke had come home just brought back all those horrible memories.
Dee Dee Tillett's son Max died from a heroin overdose a few months before Luke Ronnie. Over the several years that Max struggled with addiction before his death, Tillett experienced similar feelings of worry about her son. She says at times he had to be watched constantly.
I mean, I would send out an email to my family members, okay, who can watch Max? Like, he was 2 instead of 20. Wow. And, you know, we'd watch him 24 hours.
Just before his death, Max was on a drug to suppress his cravings for heroin. Tillett says Max also participated in a treatment program that appeared to be working, but he had to stop when the program lost funding. The Tillets are seeking legal action against the insurer that withdrew the funds. Tillett says health insurers and funding sources are not keeping up with the demand for the kind of treatment that's needed to stem the crisis posed by opioid abuse.
The Parity Act was supposed to cover it. The large insurance companies don't really, you know, they think everybody could do outpatient. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, and so when you finally get somebody who's ready to be, you know, sober, good luck.
Prosecutors say Beverly Burrell sold both Luke Ronnie and Max Tillett fatal doses of heroin. Max's father, Stephen Tillett, says whatever the verdict winds up being, he just wants Burrell to stop.
I'm not really invested in a conviction. I want to see this woman never sell drugs again.
Burrell pleaded not guilty to the charges. She opted for a trial in front of a judge instead of a jury. During the trial, her defense attorney questioned witnesses as to whether they could say for sure that the heroin the men allegedly bought from Burrell was the same drug they overdosed on. Judge Paul Scoggin has 7 days to announce his verdict in the case involving Luke Ronnie. Burrell's defense may possibly call a witness next week in Max Tillett's case. That trial is not expected to close until July. Meanwhile, families of 3 other men who overdosed on heroin allegedly purchased from Burrell await their days in court. Those trial dates have not yet been set. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
We'll be right back.